Meeting to order. This is a quarterly meeting for the pension board. If you will, we'll stand for pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call.
Charlie Esposito.
Here.
Dan Brazano.
Not here.
Robert Schroeder.
Present.
Tim Wilson.
Here.
And that is all of us.
And Vinny DeVito.
Vinny DeVito, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I must be losing weight.
I'm new to the group, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, we have a quorum. There's a sign-in sheet. If you can't, you know, sign in. Doug, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, Doug Lawson, actuary, Foster and Foster.
Foster and Foster, okay. For your information.
Thank you. I'm Bean Connor, I crunch the numbers.
Okay. And Dave?
Yes.
Robinson?
David Robinson from Chittenden Susquehanna, the attorneys.
I thought that Jeremy from the League of Cities might be here this morning, but he hasn't made it yet, so we'll continue on. On the agenda, there's a correction. You note on the item H, new business, there's a discussion regarding chairman position, and that was entered mistakenly. So that is withdrawn. Don't have that. Minutes. Anybody had a chance to read their minutes? Any questions that anybody has? Comments they want to make? Corrections?
I make a motion to accept the minutes as written.
Okay, so just the one correction of my name?
Yes. Somebody's entering a correction.
His name?
Yes.
Oh, that's it?
Yes.
Okay.
Motion. Okay, now, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Financial status plan accounts.
So on your agendas here, you'll see the quarterly report for a period ending September 30th. We started the quarter with a beginning balance of $4,025,652. We ended back $6,871 for recoupment of taxes that were paid in error on share plans. And we received revenues for fire insurance premium tax of $263,000. We had investment earnings for the quarter of $134,735. Our expenditures were our pension distributions, $31,518, and administrative expenses of $12,777. Our cash and investment balance at the period ending September 30th was $4,386,055. We also will have an adjustment of $8,000 that will be recorded in October for an invoice for Foster and Foster that was paid in error by the plan that should have been paid by the city, and that was a city invoice that was inadvertently sent to the league.
That was on the September invoice. Right?
It's on September, so it is included in that cash balance, but what happened in October
is
we're going to reverse, I guess.
Okay.
We have just two invoices for approval at this time. We have a Sugarman and Susquehanna invoice for $425 and a Foster and Foster invoice for $965. included is a breakdown of all our expenses on the following pages if you had any questions about that. And all these expenditures are under budget as evidenced by the report attached. The invoices are also included in this agenda, and the board will make a motion to approve them that day.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the two invoices.
All in favor?
Aye.
So done. Is that it, Ginger?
That is it for finance.
Dave, you want to carry on?
Okay. Good morning, everyone.
One of the things that did show up here, Dave, is that that letter listing some questions
yes.
that we had. And you're going to cover that, don't you?
Yes, I can cover that this morning as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
And hold on just a second. This will be. Oh, this is the list of questions that were posed to our attorneys Kate really wanted to know the answer to, so I figured it'd be a good idea to just have them repeat it here. So,
I'm sorry.
Funny. And Kate, that's for the record, for the minutes. Okay. Bye, Dave.
Okay, great. That's fine. Thank you, Tony. So, just going through the questions quickly. Number one, who is currently designated as the records management liaison officer? I contacted the Florida Department of State, and they confirmed that that's currently Ms. Virginia Smith, who is registered as the records management liaison officer.
She's also the city clerk.
The city clerk, yes.
And by the way, just a heads up here. While we're doing this, Kate is taking over the role of what?
Just your support recording secretary.
Okay.
And it was kind of a question within, nobody, we had like several answers
right.
to you with the RMLO, so I just wanted to find out for sure.
Kate comes from, she has been the recorder for Flag of Leech, their pension fund. And in reviewing ours, she had a couple of questions I think would best be answered by you.
Great.
Okay, and for the good of the board, so that's why we're doing it this way.
So, yes, it is the city clerk, Virginia Smith, who's registered right. with the state. Question number two, do we need to update the beneficiary forms? I take a look at the beneficiary form. I think it's fine. I don't see any need to update it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Question three, do the rules of procedure for the pension board have jurisdiction over the volunteer association electing two board members who serve? Do they need to follow the election procedures as depicted in the rules of procedure? So, as you know, the pension board's rules have provide certain procedures for electing the two members who are elected from the voluntary association. We really don't need to manage the internal process, the voluntary association's internal process for electing members. We just want to know that these are the two, which two individuals were elected. The process that the voluntary association follows, I think, is best left to them. So we don't really need to. We have the rules. We have those rules. If the voluntary association wants to follow them, that's fine. But in our opinion, they're not required to. And as long as they certify to us that here are the two individuals that we've elected, that meets our needs.
I explained today what the process is that we use and how we have a business meeting. And at that business meeting, a member would be proposed. The membership then would vote on it. And with a favorable vote, then the president of the corporation sends a letter to the board of trustees indicating that these are the two members. And any other circulation to that is informative
right.
because nobody can, that decision is final. Anybody have any questions about that? Kate, that satisfies you?
That's fine. When I was going through the rules of procedure, I just was kind of wondering if they might need some modification to reflect what the current practices are.
Mm.
Just so that they're in sync with how things are run.
Yeah, I think it may be useful to amend the procedures and just remove all of those restrictions, the conditions about the election, and just have the procedures provide that the two members who were certified by the associations haven't been elected.
But until such time as we amend them, the practices that we've been using are sufficient. And if we want to change it, that's not going to occur at this meeting. We'll have other conversations on that. To improve it if it's necessary.
Yes.
Okay. Any board members have any problem with that?
Okay. Then question four. Currently, bills and charges are sent by the city directly to the League of Cities for payment prior to approval by the trustees, and the league pays them. The trustees approve the payments at the next trustee board meeting. Do we need to change this practice? No, that's fine. That procedure is fine. It's similar to the procedures that most boards follow. Either whether it be the League of Cities or some other custodian that pays the bills, that's The general procedure, so it's fine.
The procedure, question, the procedure states that there's supposed to be two signatures approving a bill. Do our votes here count as those two signatures?
Yes, and I usually, I suppose, the warrant, at the end of meetings, the warrants are presented to the two individuals. Is that how you do it generally?
No.
No?
No. We give the okay at the meeting to pay those bills, and that's a board concurrence.
Okay.
Anybody on the board either agrees or disagrees, 99.9% of the time we have agreement.
Okay.
So it's a board approval.
Okay, that we may want to update the procedures for that as well.
Because it actually says a signature on the rules. So
we can either begin to have the warrants signed after the meeting or just, you know, on record, they'll be approved, and in that case, well, then the procedures do conform with the practice.
Jeremy, does this present any problem to you?
No, this is, it's extremely standard for all of our, same thing going on top of head. It doesn't do it that way, where the bills are go ahead and paid when you come in, so they're paid on time.
Right.
You always ratify the payments at your next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
I'm sorry, that's
just going. If we need an improvement, would you provide us with whatever you think is necessary?
If you want to continue with the current practice, then I can drop just an amendment to the procedure so that it conforms with your practice.
Is the board comfortable with what we're doing, or would you rather see the another warrant process?
No, I'm comfortable with this way.
Yeah, I agree.
And you're saying what we're doing is that?
Absolutely.
Are you okay with that, Kay?
It's your board. I just felt like
you were an invited guest, Kay.
I know. When I was reading them, I just thought they should match what you do.
Okay, fine.
Okay, great. And then the last question. Is training for trustees mandated by the state? And if so, what are the requirements and consequences failing to comply? So Chapter 112 just says that there is a requirement for continuing education. That requirement is not, there's no frequency or number of hours specified. It just says that your statement of investment policies and objectives must have a provision for continuing education. So there's no set number of hours or number of years that you have to comply with. And that leads me into one topic I want to discuss with you, and that's, I know that Christensen and Diener used to organize in the area that they would organize
on occasion
mm-hmm. Educational seminars, and we would like to continue that practice. So we've already, St. Augustine has expressed some interest in hosting it. I don't know, perhaps you might be interested in hosting it, but we're looking at sometime in 2019 organizing a seminar similar to that which they occasionally held, and that would certainly comply with your, help you fulfill your education requirements. So we'll be in touch to let you know which city, which plant wishes to host the conference.
Mm-hmm. We as a board would like to have comply with, not comply with, but we'd like to establish a continuing education process.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're not prepared to go to Tallahassee and spend 3 days there doing that.
That's right.
So we take advantage of the fact that the city holds ethics classes from time to time,
mm-hmm.
to which we are invited and we attend. Christensen and Dennett used to run a brief program that we, if we were available, the members are all volunteers.
Right.
But they don't have a whole lot of time to do a lot of things, so it's a little difficult. So we take advantage of whatever training is available when it's available. And any board member is encouraged to do that. As a matter of fact, if you would like to spend 3 days in Tallahassee attending the whole Bloom, all you have to do is say, I'd like to go. And there's usually twice a year, there's some sort of a training program put on by the state. And as I recall, most times it's Tallahassee, sometimes it's Orlando.
It's both.
They do one.
Yeah, every year.
Yeah.
They do one in Orlando and one in Tallahassee.
Okay. Correct. So any board member who would like to attend that, feel free. The board will pay for it.
And actually,
it's next week.
I was going to say,
it's quickly.
Okay. So, yeah, we do have some boards that have actually provided that trustees have to maintain certification with the FPPTA, which is that can be expensive and very time consuming, and there's absolutely no legal obligation to do that. So we'll continue the practice of holding the educational seminars that Christensen and Diener used to do, and that will satisfy your.
This is a question. It seemed to me if the board did not hire actuaries, attorneys, and the administrators, that it would be incumbent upon the board to know all of those steps.
That's right.
But since we have a board that hires and farms out, so to speak, all of those facets, which we are briefed on, followed up on, I think that maybe not eliminates, but might mitigate.
Absolutely. And you have, you still have some undefined obligation to maintain some education. Yeah.
Well, Chapter 112 doesn't require hours, but in our rules it says, it states that we are required to attend at least one training per term, to right. state the amount, so right. just keep that in mind. If we're going to have this in our rules,
we'll give you that. Yes.
Well, again, that's a part of, we're talking about maybe adjusting the rules,
yeah,
so we'll take a look at all those.
One per term is one couple hour session every 2 years. I don't think that's too much to ask.
It's not. That's part of taking the job. Right. You have to force it to it.
But I just want to make that clear. Mm-hmm. The state doesn't mandate it. It is in our rules.
Mm-hmm. Right. So. And then, so that brings me to the next point of discussion. That is the ongoing discussion that we've been having regarding forfeitures and what to do with the airplane forfeiture monies. So we had, following our discussion at the last meeting, I was able to understand a little bit better how the board, what the board might like to do about forfeitures. I drafted text that if, and again, this is just I got at this to present an idea, and the board can certainly modify it as it wishes. So this text would be, if this is how the board wants to go forward, then this would be put into the form of an ordinance amendment and presented for adoption. But the heart of it, so there's several little minor amendments that are just as to form and references to paragraphs instead of subparagraphs and things like that. The heart of the amendment is really on page 35 under paragraph F, which speaks of forfeitures. So what I've provided is that forfeiture amounts will be redistributed on a per capita basis to all current members, retirees, and beneficiaries, and that the redistribution would occur on each valuation date in the form of a 13th check for retirees and beneficiaries and as an adjustment to the share account of current members. So that would essentially broaden the distribution of forfeitures. Mm-hmm. And that was my understanding of what the board would like to do, is mm-hmm. to redistribute on a broader basis the forfeitures.
Just the forfeiture.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, would be a no-cost item. There wouldn't be, Fred and I discussed this, there wouldn't be any actuarial impact upon the plan. It's just taking the forfeiture money and redistributing mm-hmm. it. And then also there's
there would be a no-impact.
Correct.
Statement.
And I also just made a couple changes to, again, to reflect the change in the, that was...
That would happen whether or not we did this.
That's right. Of,
the heart of what you're talking about is
that's right, under F on paragraph. Uh-huh. So, if anyone has any questions about that?
I don't.
Yes, just in theory, that when you do the evaluation, the forfeitures, don't they come back into the current members, they're redistributed there, and so yeah, wouldn't that reduce the amount of the amount that needs to be funded?
No.
Currently the forfeitures, it's money that we have put into buckets mm-hmm. for all the active members, and if anybody leaves the following year non-vested, we just take their portion and redistribute it back to the remaining active members in the next year. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have any impact on funding. It's just shifting money into different buckets. Okay. This proposal would broaden the number of people who would get those forfeitures to include retirees.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, thank you.
Any board members have any comments they want to make with respect to that paragraph?
I do. I read this over and over, and I went through a lot of things, and And I feel as fiduciaries, we're voted in these positions to ensure that the financial responsibilities of all the rules, regulations, and laws that are set forth to the board. That being said, I think that this proposed ordinance change violates that trust, and I'll tell you why. Rules that are imposed on this board state that only active firefighters are entitled to the benefits of the improvements afforded to the LoSAP program. Continuous amendments that include plan improvements for retired individuals, to me, is a direct contradiction of the written requirement of the monies going to an active member. Although the associate members, they provide an invaluable service that we need to this organization, this does not supersede written requirements that have been handed down to us. So I believe that this is a backdoor attempt to violate those requirements for a loophole, and that's based, and that's how I feel that it's based. And I don't, we can look at it in 100 different ways, but I feel if the law is written that the state monies are issued to active members, we can't just change it that the monies that are in excess, which technically are still state monies, are changed to go to retirees, which in this case would include non-active members by law. So that's
you my said associates. Associates, you didn't mean associates.
Or non-active members, retirees. You know, I'm just saying, I know a lot of our retirees are associate members, which I think all of our members that are current should be involved, but that's not my
requirement. Well, whether or not they were associates would have no effect on it. They would get them as retired people. Formerly active retired.
Correct. So now you're distributing funds that are slated for active members to non-active members. And I think that's a loophole. It could be perceived as a backdoor attempt to distribute funds improperly.
Could it be conceived as an attempt to follow your responsibilities as a fiduciary to level out the playing field?
Our fiduciary responsibility is to have been plan improvements.
Yeah.
And those plan improvements, unfortunately, don't include retirees. It includes active members.
Well, plan improvements should include the retirees as well, I would think. Besides that, it's not changing anything. The money initially was to the active members and not to any retirees.
Correct.
It's that which is fed back into the system.
Correct. But
it should be fed back as a leveling device to kind of mitigate the fact that fewer and fewer members are gaining more and more of it. And it's even among the actives, it's not spread out equally. I see no attempt at a backdoor maneuver here. Initially, my reason for even suggesting this was to level out the playing field for all those who were active members. And you're not taking anything away from anybody that they were initially entitled to, because you've taken the forfeiture money, and you're still going to get it as an active member. And when you leave being an active member, you're going to be a part of the retired people who will also, have those funds available to you.
I fully understand the direction you'd like to take.
Yeah.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
But my concern is, we sent a lot of money on this board to have mm-hmm. a private letter ruling from the IRS, mm-hmm. and at no point did it state that. So are we going to go back to the IRS for another interpretation if we're going to change the ordinance? I mean, whether it costs us money or not, the IRS approved what we sent them.
Yeah.
So now we're changing that because we don't like what it says anymore?
I don't like what it says anymore.
I understand what you're saying, but you're now including non-active members in payouts of state monies.
Yeah. But you're getting any way of paying monies as part of retirement. What's that, Bob?
I don't know. Never mind. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I understand where Tim's coming from, because to me, if a person forfeits money, they go on, this was going to be an active member, they leave, they forfeit, and that's, I guess it's part of what I was getting at when I was questioning Doug, is that this is we created a new allocation here. And it's kind of troubling to me because most of the pension plans that I see and understand, I'm from the commercial side of the world, not the government side. Mm-hmm. And not only is it the monies that come in from a forfeiture is allocated back into the current accounts, and I've never seen it otherwise. But understand, I'm from mm-hmm. the commercial. I'm from the commercial side, in other words.
I don't know why there'd be a difference.
Well,
there could be a difference because what you may be, what you see would be mostly qualified plans, tax qualified plans, and this really, this is not a tax qualified plan, so entirely different set of rules that apply. But we can, I think that what's drafted here would be permissible legally. Of course, Division of Retirement that ultimately would have an ultimate say. Of course, the most important thing is that all the board members feel comfortable with it. And whatever the board wants to do, we make sure that legally we draft it in such a way that, that it has the most likelihood of being accepted by the state and not posing a problem with the IRS.
And one thing I'd like to point out is that this current retirees, whether they're commercial or private sector or public sector, you accept the terms. When you retire, you accept those terms. 5 years down the road, if the plan makes a change, they don't go back to those retirees. You accepted those terms when you retired. And not to mention that everything that is distributed by this board is essentially a gift because this was not someone's paid career. So when we give a gift and it ends, then that's, you know, hey, thanks for the gift, let's move forward. But to continuously dredge up and make payees or make new accounts or reallocation of funds, to me, that's cause for concern. And I understand, listen, I think everyone should get it, but we went after the IRS, the very specific rules. This took a very long time. And I know a lot of things are under interpretation. You know, that's their great word, the IRS. But they, when they sent back a private letter ruling that we had sent in, it cost us $30,000 to get looked at, they accepted what we sent them. Mm-hmm. So in order to change the ordinance, you know, whether it's minor or major, you're still changing what was approved. And that's a concern to me.
Well, what do you think about that?
When you send a plan to the IRS for a determination letter, private letter ruling, you can rely on that plan, on that ruling, as long as, you know, as long as nothing substantive has changed. I think that, in my opinion, if the idea of the forfeitures here has more concern with state law, then I don't think that this is something, that this amendment is something the IRS would turn to say, well, you can no longer rely on our private letter ruling, but every time you make an amendment to a plan, you do take some risk that the IRS will say, oh, well, you've changed this, this is a material change, you can no longer rely on the ruling. I think that the risk of that with regard to this amendment is pretty slim, but it's there. It's not without risk.
Mm-hmm. But there's risk of state law violation.
Well, we can always simply make contact with Division of Retirement and see if they have any. And this is a sort of similar. We have similar arrangements like this with other plans. And if they're, you know, we can just by phone call or email. Have a discussion with the Division of Retirement and say this is what we're considering to do. Do you see any problem with it? I don't think this would pose a problem with regard to state law. But again, the most important thing is that the board feel comfortable and agreement with it.
Board is entitled to any questions they have, any feelings to have them modified or supported. Doug, Denny, you have any input to throw into this?
No, I've heard both sides. I've heard the discussions. I thought about it ahead of time. Discussions with you, Charlie, and David. Actuarially, it's pretty cut and dry for us. If this goes forward, we just expand the number of people who tap into the forfeitures. So from an actuarial standpoint, we've got the easy part. Mm-hmm. The difficult part is on the legal side. Mm-hmm. And
possibly, I don't know. I think that quite possibly we need to have this reviewed by the people at stake. And the other side is we might ask Ice Miller about it. They were the ones who got us through the private letter room, and perhaps they have some thoughts on this. I'm just very liquid this way. I mean, I would err on the side of caution here.
Okay. Tim, any other comments?
No.
Any?
I would open a kettle of worms without doing a proper investigation.
I would propose we table this.
Well, you're a chairperson, so I would. Can you table an item as a chair? You can't make a motion.
I'm suggesting.
So I would like to make a motion that at this time, if you want to do further investigation, that's fine. Yeah. But at this time, we make more ordinance changes. It remains as written until you can do further investigation. But I make that motion.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor of that motion? Oh, is this, you second it?
I second it.
All in favor of that motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. You need to do anything else?
No, that's all on there. Just one other thing there. As I mentioned, there are just a few kind of housekeeping amendments in here that I propose, references to subsections and things like that.
Having nothing to do with the...
Right. And also, as I mentioned at the last meeting, last year's tax reform raised the limits from 3,000 to 6,000.
Yeah.
So I made some... amendments in here regarding that as well. Which would like for me to draft up an ordinance for the next meeting to have those amendments incorporated into the plan. Because right now the plan still references the old 3,000 amount.
Okay. That could change.
So if the board would like, I'll draft an ordinance to amend that section.
And that has to be amended anyway, right?
Sure.
It's got to be brought up to the $6,000 mark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Motion by anyone?
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Second.
Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, I'll draft a little amendment to the procedures with regard to payments. As I said, just to, so that the procedures conform with the current practice.
Okay.
And if any board member wants to send me any other comments that they have about any other section of the procedures that they would like to be amended,
this is not anything we bring up at the next quarter,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Any questions? No. Next. Also on the legal review, we had a calendar for next year's meetings. Kate, do you have that? I believe it's in the package somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Okay. Yeah, page 28.
Yeah.
I've been through that. I don't know. Sometimes we have conflict with the association holidays and so on. But I think we're pretty clear on this one.
Can I have those dates or continue?
Yeah, no, give me a hold of a sec.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find it.
Page
28,
I think. Yeah.
Okay, there it is. It's February 15th. We're talking about 2019. May 10th. August 16th and November 15th.
Perfect. Thank you.
Bob, do you have any difficulties with that?
Nope.
Tim, anything that you see on the calendar?
No.
Benny?
No.
Okay. They'll make a motion to accept these as our...
I'll move to approve the calendar dates from 2019.
Okay.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any comments? Passed. Oh, all in favor. Aye. All right. Next is our old business. Discussion of possible action regarding contracting for a pension administrator. And we got a quote in from the League of Cities to provide that service if we, we, you know, if we want to avail ourselves of it. And that's their letter is on pages 80 and 81 of the minutes. In which we got a letter from Jeff Lonely. Jeremy, that's right?
Jeff Lonely, yes.
Yeah, okay. And in which you say that you do certain stuff for us now, and to take on the full administrative responsibilities, yeah, you list what they are. I have a question. In the first paragraph, he says, currently the FMPTF provides the board with investment management, performance monitoring, as well as recording and custodial banking services. I do believe that you do the annual report.
Correct.
Where in there does that fit?
That would fall under, well, technically, I guess that would not be in there, under any one of those four descriptions there. That would be an additional.
But that should be
an additional wording. But yes, that is already done. That's not anything that's being proposed. That's already done.
All right. So that should be included under this is what we are presently providing.
Correct.
Okay. So we can add that. And
there's
then
record keeping, I guess you could put it under.
Okay. Now, could I know sometimes that's, you know, an ongoing process for a couple of questions to come back from the state on you said yes when you should have said no or something like that.
They
want that request. Yeah. Everybody's got a job. Does the board have this?
Yes.
Yeah.
You got?
Yeah, well, there's two.
Okay. Tim, do you want to go further with this?
No, I think with the changes that occurred in the city clerk taking over the agenda and packages and being named as a records custodian mm-hmm. by the state, I say that we just disregard this discussion for an outside administrator.
Mm-hmm. And stick with what we've got now.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to revisit later in a year or so, if mm-hmm. it's not being successful, then I think mm-hmm. we can...
Yeah, we're going to go through a growth session here. With the new switchovers that
yeah,
we have.
Curve,
the intent in talking to any of the city personnel is that they want to do the right thing.
Right.
And I'm comfortable with that. And I'd like to continue with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And leave this, I don't know how long this quote is going to be good for.
Indefinitely for the time period.
Okay.
And if I may just add, again, this was just last meeting you all were kind of talking
right.
about some changes and we have, it doesn't matter to us, and at least we're happy to continue as we always have. We just want to make sure that you were aware.
Uh-huh.
If you wanted us to take over those duties to assist,
yeah.
we offer that to you. It's been that it's 750 a quarter, essentially.
Yeah.
As I said, we'll come into the recording minutes, agenda, ticker, everything. Mm-hmm. That number has not changed in a very long time. I'm not aware of it going to change anytime soon. So at least for the foreseeable future, yes, that number will stay the same if you ever did want to revisit it. But we're more than happy to continue as we currently have.
Okay. If indeed we came to you and said, hey, maybe we want to make a change here, I have a couple of questions that maybe you could answer.
Sure.
In what form would the minutes be provided? If you were doing it all now, right? In what form would you provide those minutes? As a written document, verbatim document, highlighted?
We don't typically do a verbatim. If you requested that, I'm not going to say we can or can't. But we just don't have any boards that have ever requested that.
Uh-huh.
So it's essentially more of a just highlights of all the discussions with the motions made along.
So we could request verbatim.
You can have, well, of course you can request. I'm not
running. The cost would be
so I don't
yeah.
know.
Okay.
Is that something we're willing to provide? I mm-hmm. I don't know that without asking the people who actually need to handle that work.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's going to be recorded,
yeah.
so you can always go back and you can have the audio recording of it.
Okay. Could we request you to research specifics within the, if you were doing the minutes,
mm-hmm.
and we saw the highlights, mm-hmm. First off, would we get copies of the verbal?
You
go to a website or
we would have the audio available if you wanted it. Yes.
Where would it be available?
We could probably make it available on your web page.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any problems there if you wanted. And yes, we could absolutely go. Yeah, if you called us in the middle of court and said, "Hey, have questions about something that was said, can you look into it?
Yeah. Could you give me the question that we'd ask is, this is specific, and I don't know exactly where it is in the minutes. Can you research and pick out this item?
Okay, absolutely.
You can do that?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. And what would the time frame be for providing minutes after a meeting?
Typically, we try to get them out within 2 weeks or so. I think 2 weeks is the goal that we have internally.
Uh-huh. Is there any criteria that says it should be longer or it should be short? Legally,
Not I'm aware of.
Not you're aware.
No.
Okay, so if we as a board requested minutes to come to us, not 4 days in advance, but 12 days in advance, there's nothing in any rules, regulations, or laws that would say, no, you can't do that because of sunshine law or...
No, just we have to make sure that that it's in the agenda, that the agenda is posted, that there's reasonable notice, and that would be, in conformance with those requirements. I just have to look at, see if your procedures say anything specific about that.
Just to clarify, that was 2 weeks after the meeting, not 2 weeks before the next one. So after this meeting,
we got 3 month interval.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't want to wait 2 months to see it.
Right, no.
No, okay. All right, thank you, Jeremy. Yes. Appreciate that. Do we have to make a motion to? I think we should do something.
We end the discussion until the minutes.
We no longer proceed with the administrative change. Okay. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. All right. There was a discussion last time on possible action regarding the current contract with Foster and Foster. And I spoke with you, Doug, and you said that you would like to come down and tell us why we should stay with you.
Yeah.
I agree.
we've been with this plan since the beginning when they were still cutting trees down and building houses here. For a plan that's seems like it should be fairly simple and it's relatively small, there's been a lot of complexities along the way that I think we are uniquely qualified. We implemented them. I work with Charlie all the time directly. He's got my cell phone. He's got mine. I've got his. And we've worked through some very interesting aspects of this plan, from developing the share plan, making sure it complies with maximum IRS limits, to making sure that we became more conservative on the investment return assumption, so that we, were proactive in keeping the city from having to put in any kind of funding, because we know what the establishment was from the beginning. The city will fund this as long as they don't have to put anything in. So we've, in the past, worked closely with Chris Quinn, former finance director, with Charlie along the way, and I think that we have the most historical knowledge of this plan, both on the benefits and on the funding side. And think that we've done a good job, and we'd like to continue working with the board going forward. We've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. I get up here several times a year, so I'm able to split expenses when I'm usually coming back, just like yesterday, Fernandina, Neptune, St. Augustine. We have a lot of plans in this area, and I've been very happy to have Palm Coast as part of that group.
Okay. We have your estimate of costs for 2019.
Yep.
Correct. And by the way, at the last meeting we had, there was comment that I think, Jeremy, that you made, that you thought those numbers were kind of high. And in the interim, I don't know whether that $8,000 was included.
It was included.
Yes. Yeah. So there was a mistake, an escalation of the cost for Foster of $8,000 that didn't belong in that. So we backed that out, and that number has come down. I'm sorry, Doug, are you done?
I got it, yep.
Okay.
If you have other questions,
I got a couple more for Jeremy. You know that we have two plans, really, right? The defined benefit and the share plan. And in your comments, and quote, which were kind of abbreviated, in which you say it's Southern Actuaries who will be actually be doing the work.
Correct. Southern Actuaries.
Right.
Correct.
And let me get this out. I guess the letter from Stephanie Forbes, and in which she said, if the plan goes full administration, which we've decided against at the moment anyway, it can continue to use Foster and Foster as the actuary. But most of our plans use Southern Actuarial Services. For Southern Actuarial Services to prepare your valuation and individual benefit statements for the first year, it would be about $8,887. The valuation price includes GASB 67 and 68, and Section 11264 reports for individual calculation in new retirees, most of them are about $375. Using that, does this quote that I'm assuming that's from you, right? The quote we get would be from you, the League of Cities?
Correct. That quote you have there is the actual quote.
If we went to contract, would it be with you?
The contract would be with us, yes, with the league.
Okay. Does this quote include the individual annual statements of benefit to each individual?
Yes.
It does. Does it include it for both the defined benefit and for the share plan,
correct,
which are two separate reports?
Correct.
Anybody have any questions?
I'm just trying to figure out whether, because there's quite a, kind of looks to me like there's quite a difference between Foster and the League of Cities.
Mm-hmm.
just wonder. I mean, I guess the question I got really has to do with are these apples to an oranges, mm-hmm, or am I looking at apples and apples? And it's tough to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Segue for me.
Bobby?
That's a segue for me.
Go ahead.
It's not apples to apples. Unless things have changed on Chuck Carr's side, he's the actuary for, so he's some actuarial services. He's going to fit a one-size-fits-all template of assumptions for your plan. We've actually been part of extracting League of Cities from some other small plans, and I looked over the valuation, and this is, I've seen several times, it's the exact same group of assumptions. Batch of assumptions. I understand maybe it's changed since that he will not come here and present the valuation to you or address whether assumptions are reasonable for your plan or should be changed. The more concerning thing to me is, and we saw this with the City of Edgewater when they were with the Principal Financial Group, and it seems to be the same arrangement with League of Cities, is the actuary and the investment consultant are in the same company. To me, that's inherently a conflict of interest, and I don't know how you can claim to be a fiduciary. We claim to be fiduciaries as the actuary. If you have the folks who are advising on investment strategy, and I know you can pick, you know, three different ways of investing, but if you have the same group consulting on investing strategy, but you have in the same company the actuary determining funding requirements to cause cash flows in, that's an inherent conflict of interest because it's in the best interest of that company to generate revenue. They're not necessarily working in the best interest of the pension board. So do you understand what I'm saying there? It's that you have the actuary computing funding requirements with assumptions, and that money that may come into the trust fund if there's a contribution requirement of the sponsor is then invested
with the input from the same company, just a different wing of it, the investment consultant side. And they're paid not on a flat fee. They're paid on a $1,000 flat fee, I think it is, plus basis points on assets. That, to me, is an inherent conflict of interest. And we extracted the three City of Edgewater plans from the Principal Financial Group, which had a very similar arrangement. We'll call it a wrap arrangement. So, Bob, you asked, is this apples to apples? And it's not. It seems like, oh, they'll do a valuation report. They'll do the GASB. They'll do the Chapter 112.664. The bigger concern is, are they really acting as fiduciaries? And will you have access to the actuary to give you presentations, give you advice? And if that actuary does give you advice, will you always be questioning, is it in the board and city's best interest, or is it in the best interest of League of Cities? That's my say.
That's your take.
That's my say.
Okay. Just by way of, yes, I'm sorry, Jeremy. Go ahead. You got it. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I have to take issue with just about everything that was just said because none of that is true. I'm not sure why we were just compared to Principal. We have completely unrelated to any of that. Chuck Carr is a third party. Southern Actuary is a third party. They do not work with the league. They do not work for the league. Our consulting service, third party, do not work for the league. They're over here and over here. They have nothing to do with each other. As a matter of fact, I'm sure they have interacted, but if that would be on a rare, rare occasion, probably because we all happen to be at some conference together or something. There is everything that was just described, while if it was accurate, would make sense, that would be an issue. None of that is the case here. We have no ulterior motives. There's no conflict of interest whatsoever because our consultants don't interact with the actuary whatsoever. None of that is really, it's one of those that it actually makes it difficult to defend yourself when accusations on that level are being stated. But that said, I don't want to get into any of that. We do provide, one other thing that also was not accurate. Chuck Carr he's always available by phone. He will absolutely make himself available to this board in person if that's what the board chooses. I will add, and I was going to add that anyway, this price includes phone conversations at any time. If you do want to hear, one of the reasons he keeps his costs down is for boards that don't need him to actually come there in person and are okay with phone conversations and what have you. That could come at an extra expense depending on whether or not we can work it out with some stuff where he's already traveling. But if he has to make an independent trip now, that would come at an extra expense. I don't think it would quite make up the gap at all. Probably a couple $1,000, you might guess. Mm-hmm. I could, of course, find out and get you an exact number. But no, he absolutely is. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not that you all don't get any input. As a matter of fact, when he makes his presentation to the board, I listen to him do it 100 times over. He will ask you to talk about all the assumptions, how he comes to those conclusions, and then he'll ask the board, these fit with what you all see? Do you want me to make any changes? He absolutely will make the changes if the board chooses. So. To suggest that he's not going to be involved with you all, that just frankly, unfortunately, isn't accurate at all. So, no, you would expect, and if you did, you should expect an extremely high level service. If you don't get it, I would expect you to make a change to somebody who did provide that to you. So, but I don't hesitate to think that if you didn't make that switch, you would get the service that you expect.
Got it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Just one reflection to the board, then I'll open up for whatever you want to say, is that there is no obligation to go low bidder on the actuary. Bob, you have any questions that you want to bring up?
I asked my question.
Okay. Ready?
No, it seems pretty clear as far as that goes.
Tim?
I think one facet is that this is a very unique plan, and we have seen our trials and tribulations along the way trying to, being that we're a no paid member plan, definitely presents a very unique situation to an actuary and from an accounting standpoint, I'm sure, because you can't base it on a lot of things that normal plans that have paid members do. I know that our fees, some are higher, some are lower, but in all actuality, we have a lot of what-if scenarios and, hey, can you test this out for us? So annually, our actuarial fees will be higher because we can pick up that phone and say, hey, can you evaluate this if we did it? And that all comes with a fee. So it all comes with a fee. When you call to have a what-if looked at or evaluated, you have to pay for that. So if we were to take out all the what-ifs and phone calls that are, you know, that may bring us to more of a competitive rate than what we're seeing as a total annual dollar amount. So I personally think that the historical relationship that we have with Foster & Foster is great. I don't see any need for change, but that's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I'll just say, as a, from a legal standpoint, let me reassure you that you don't have any obligation at all to go low bidder. Of course, have a fiduciary duty to act in the best interest of the participants and beneficiaries, but that doesn't mean that every time a service provider comes and says we can provide this this service for you at a lower cost, that you have to take it. So you do not have that obligation.
Okay. Personally, the relationship that we had with the League of Cities and with Washington Force, for the factions or the work that we do for one another, I'm very satisfied with them. I am very satisfied with Foster & Foster for the actuary work. I am very satisfied with the League of Cities for the work that it does. I don't see any imperative right now to make a change in that, since we're not bound by cost. And you are more expensive, and we should look at that.
Yes, we are. We are more expensive, that is true.
Okay. And but a couple of facets. If we would try to impose a change now, we're really late in the game for 2019, which I think would create a problem for just about everybody. My recommendation would be to the board that we stay with Foster & Foster for this year. If we want to look more at what the comparatives are between League of Cities and actually not League of Cities, it's Southern Actuary, and Foster & Foster, we could do that later on. But my opinion would be that we ought to stay with what we have, what we know is working well. And we're right now at the point where the actuarial work really begins for the valuation report. So, if anybody would care to make a motion on that,
I agree. I'll make that motion.
You second it. Any comments?
I'm
all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. One more issue, and that again was from Foster & Foster, and you gave us a letter suggesting that. You had unique potential to provide the annual report.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I think the job that the League of Cities has been doing on the annual report doesn't warrant a change. And my recommendation to the board would be, don't do that.
Thank you.
Okay?
Yeah, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
That's it. So if anybody would like to make a motion on that,
my turn.
A money man.
I feel like Alice in Wonderland. I don't know. It's my second meeting. I'm still confused.
Anything? Okay. Did you second? Who seconded it?
Did we have a motion?
Did we get a motion?
Okay. I move that we stay with the
The annual report being
prepared by
The League of Cities.
League of Cities. Okay.
I second that.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Now, I think, is there any member of the public? Oh, sorry. No, that's right. Mm-hmm. Any member of the public like to make a statement, a question, anything at this time?
No.
Okay. Any discussion on the board's part of items that were not on the agenda? Would somebody like to adjourn this meeting?
I'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Big deal now. Oh, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Quick. I'm just kidding.